All right. So we have, I think, what's going to be a real treat of a panel today. We're talking about an issue that's very much in the news, and it's something that until recently has gotten very little attention in the United States, much more in other countries. So this is sort of a time where everybody's suddenly tuning in and where there's a lot of action and ideas. And so we're really excited to bring this panel to APHA because there's a lot of need for public health to get engaged and a lot of opportunity to bring this issue forward. So I'm going to give the first presentation talking about wasted food and bringing in the public health context of how that fits with wasted food. And then Emily Broad-Lieb is going to speak about food date labels. And I'll give more of a detailed introduction before each talk. And then Megan Nuismer is going to talk about fruit tree gleaning and food bank donations with the local angle here in New Orleans. And then finally, for our last speaker, so we originally had Dana Gunders of NRDC, and at the last minute she was not able to come, and we got extraordinarily lucky, and we got Danielle Nierenberg, who runs the Food Tank program, which many of you may get emails from them, and she's doing a lot of work on food waste, and she's going to share about some of that work. So before I get started, I want to do one more thing. So you may have heard about this app called the World Food Clock. This is a screenshot of it from just 9 seconds, and it shows how much food was produced, consumed, and wasted. And what I am going to do is start this off, and we'll keep it running while we're talking here, and you will get a view of how much food was wasted over the time that we were talking during this session. And it's presented in metric tons, which is 2,200 pounds. Okay, so let me introduce our first speaker, who is me. And I am going to speak about wasted food and public health. And I work at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health Center for a Livable Future. And I'm also on the faculty at the school. And I also just edited a new textbook on food systems and public health, environment, and equity, which I have a copy, and I'm happy to share it with anybody that would like to see it. So I'm going to start with just a brief overview of food waste and environment, and then give an original framework for how food waste connects with public health. And then finally, I'm going to briefly present results from a nationally representative consumer survey. So how do people relate to this issue in this country? And I'll start with a picture of the Rose Bowl. So every day in the United States, we waste enough food to fill that from top to bottom. So that's 40% of all the food that's harvested in this country that goes to waste. And it's also a 50% increase since the 1970s. And that's important because that shows that we didn't always waste this much and we don't always have to in the future. From an environmental standpoint, so this is the largest component of our municipal solid waste. And just that waste decomposing in the landfill puts out nearly a quarter of our national methane emissions, and methane's a very powerful greenhouse gas. But the other environmental impact of the food waste is the fact that all those resources and environmental externalities and other externalities that went into producing that food never needed to have happened if we're just going to waste it. And so that accounts, for, among other things, for 4% of our oil and a quarter of our fresh water that's used for irrigation. If you think globally in terms of greenhouse gas emissions, so we have China as the number one emitter, United States number two. If wasted food was a country, it would be the number three emitter of greenhouse gas emissions in the world. And it would be the number one user of blue water or irrigation for agriculture. Now, globally, around a third of all food is wasted, but you can see down there on the bottom is North America. We, by far, waste more than any place else in the world. And what's interesting is that where in the supply chain the waste happens differs around the world. So if you think about lower-income countries, you can see a lot of it's happening at the production and handling and storage and distribution levels, the blue, because it's a lack of infrastructure that they're facing. Whereas here, we're almost all in the orange, 60%, and that's at the consumption consumer level. And when we, in public health, we often don't necessarily want to only focus on changing individual behavior, but And I think that when we address the consumer level, we don't have to only focus on changing individual behavior. We need to change individual behavior, but there's a lot of policies and structures and other things that play into how individuals relate to food waste. And when we think about what are we going to do about it, so here's a picture from my desk, and they actually, at the Bloomberg School of Public Health, took away our trash cans and replaced them with those mini little compost bins attached to our recycling bins. And a lot of people, when they think about addressing food waste, start and stop right there, like composting. And it's great. Composting is really important. It's critical. But it's just one piece of what needs to happen. You can come on up if you want. There's plenty of space up in the front if you'd like to sit. And a real public health approach to food waste is thinking about the fact that what we really want to do is start at the top and prevent it from being produced, prevent it from being purchased. And then the second priority would be to feed hungry people, and on and on. And sort of composting is the second to last choice in this hierarchy. So let me share a framework for how I like to think about how food waste intersects with public health. And when we think about these concepts, often we think it's like mom and apple pie, everything good. We like preventing food waste, we like promoting public health, so naturally the two must be 100% equal in terms of what we do. And I would say it's not necessarily the case. So there's a lot of actions that we can take that are win-wins for health and waste. But there's a number of actions also that would fall into these categories where it's really a win for waste, but it doesn't necessarily do so much for health or maybe even isn't good for health, and the reverse in terms of wins for health. And so our job is to be creative at this point in history and really think about ways that we can turn all of those two categories on the side into wins for everything. And I believe every single one of them can be addressed, but we just need to be thinking about it and proactive. And here's that framework with all the categories filled in, which I'm not going to read you this slide, but I'll just tell you that I'm going to talk about four categories: nutrition, food security, food safety, and a kind of conceptual category. So there's grocery shopping while full and grocery shopping while hungry. When it comes to nutrition, there's a lot of behaviors that are kind of win-win. They benefit both. So we want people to plan ahead before they go shopping, check the cupboards, think about your portion sizes, make a list, and stick to what you planned. All those things benefit nutrition, benefit waste. Clear, simple, right? We want people to right-size their portions, right-size the kinds of packages that they buy so that they don't end up with a lot of leftover at the end that can't be eaten. Canned and frozen foods are good for public health in the sense that from a food security perspective, when fresh fruits and vegetables aren't necessarily affordable, canned and frozen foods can substitute. And fewer options. So behavioral economics tells us that the more options that there are available to us, the more likely we are to choose some of them, and even the more of them that we will choose. And so having fewer options can be helpful in terms of reducing overconsumption and reducing waste. But also think about it in the context of a restaurant. When we have a million options available to us in a restaurant, that restaurant has to keep a good supply of all of those ingredients on hand for us. So here's some areas where it's just a win for health and not necessarily for waste. And there's two that I'd identify in this category. And one is that we in public health really encourage people to buy a lot of produce, and we inspire them. And they go to the store, the farmer's market, full of their fresh inspiration, and they buy way more than they're actually likely to eat. And so it's maybe tempering or structuring that message a little better. And we tell people, put that food where you can see it so it inspires you to eat it. But again, that's leaving it out on the counter where it's not stored properly. Here's a win for the waste side. Basically, eating more packaged and processed foods could prevent food waste in the sense that those are going to be preserved a lot longer. But from a health side, not necessarily our priority. And then there's the Clean Platter Club. You know, if you think if it's sitting there, I better eat it so I don't waste it, but not necessarily realizing that if you eat it and you didn't want it or you didn't like it, then that's also a form of waste, basically. So let me turn to food security, and the wins here are pretty obvious. The short-term wins are that, you know, we save money for individuals, business, and government by preventing waste. Food recovery, which you're going to hear more about during the session. And then from a long-term food security perspective, we're avoiding wasted resources, avoiding all those unnecessary environmental impacts. And, you know, the United Nations is telling us we need 70% more food by 2050. So addressing food waste can help meet that gap. But Here's a challenge. So when you think about resilience, one of the things that you want to do is you want to have duplication. You want to have extra. You want to plant extra in case you don't know what's going to happen in terms of that year's planting season, harvest season. You want an area to have more food stock than is needed, just in case. That's a food security thing, but it doesn't necessarily reduce waste. And then food safety. And I love this cartoon. We're having leftovers again. Don't worry, I shaved off all the fuzzy parts. I'm going to knit you a sweater. So the win-win is, and I would say that I had a former roommate a housemate, who you would walk into the kitchen and you would see him there with a bag of spinach eating it with a spoon, all the leftovers. And it was completely disgusting. And we were all horrified. And he'd say, don't worry, it's actually safe. And the thing is that there's a lot of things, a lot of decay of food that happens that may be, you know, really distasteful to us, but it's not necessarily unsafe. And there's a tremendous amount that even we in public health haven't digested and explained, even for ourselves, never mind to explain to consumers about where that line is between what's safe and what's not safe. So what we really need to do is learn more about what is actually safe, not encouraging people to eat that spinach or drink it, but we need to learn more. And you know, many people are throwing out food based on date labels, as you'll hear from Emily in a few minutes, and that's also a huge problem. And we need to learn about proper food storage. From a win health and win waste, these are sort of the flip side of the same argument, is the kind of when in doubt, throw it out, good for health, not necessarily good for waste, or the flip side, just don't worry about it, just eat it. And I couldn't resist showing one more cartoon when I was doing my cartoon search. Nobody told James that the 5-second rule didn't apply in their line of work. So, okay. Conceptual linkages. I think a lot of people think about eating clean, doing the right thing, being disciplined in that same box, whether it's for food or waste. And we can use that to our advantage in preventing both of those challenges. And then from a waste perspective, I think we in public health really have promoted this idea that our food should be beautiful and everything should be the freshest possible. And that's, you know, that's a good thing, and it probably inspires people to eat more produce. And at the same time, it also probably is inspiring a lot of waste. And so we really need to think about what's a good way, I don't know the answer, but what's a good way to structure some of those messages? So again, we want to bring everything into that win-win category, and that's the framework. Let me finally briefly turn to this National Consumer Survey. And I'm just going to show you 3 slides from it, but we did an online sample, nationally representative probability-based samplings kind of survey. And what we found is that overall, most Americans think they've got it under control. They say 73% of them say that they waste less than the average American. They report doing a lot of the behaviors that we would like to see them do. They say that they are knowledgeable about how to prevent waste, and they say that they are interested and concerned. So, you know, whether or not that self-report is actually accurate, it also says something to those who are communicating about waste, is that we want to communicate to people sort of recognizing where they perceive themselves to be. When it comes to their motivations for reducing waste, it was interesting that saving money and setting an example for children were really at the top of the list. And what was at the very bottom of the list was the environment. So what this tells me is that in terms of messaging, we want to promote messages that maybe use these motivations that people already have in terms of saving money, and we want to educate about the environmental things, but it may not be the way that we specifically frame and lead into our messages. And finally, the last slide I want to show is when we ask people about what are their reasons for wasting food, the top 2 reasons have to do with public health and food quality. Number 1 is I worry about food poisoning, and number 2 is I want to eat only the freshest foods. So that ties into some of what I was just saying in terms of the public health angle on food waste. So in conclusion, there's a significant role for public health in addressing food waste. So we need to keep doing and keep supporting those win-wins, and we need to put a waste frame on some of that messaging for people so it's not just talking about the health angle but also the waste angle. We need to actively seek ways to turn around those single wins, improve our information on food safety, change how we communicate about food quality and beauty and freshness in some way, and lead with money, inform about environment, and just recognize that even though these self-reports from Americans seem really off, perhaps, from what we know of the numbers of the quantity of food that's being wasted, it tells us something that's still useful in terms of people's self-perception. So thank you. Ideas are just to put them out there to you. Because the first one is that just on Friday I was talking with Elise Golan of the USDA who runs their food waste program, and she said to me, what can we do? Like, what are the things that USDA could do more to help advance the food waste prevention issue? And so I would put that out there to you, and maybe you can give some ideas to bring to her. Second is, what are the biggest opportunities for public health? And then ideas for addressing those single win issues. But let's go back. Yeah. I mean, I think that it has to do with a lot of things. I think it has to do with sort of the way that our approach to food has changed over time, and the way that we value it, and the sort of cheapness of the food, and the sizes of the portions that are given out. I think that it's sort of when people are cooking at home, a lot of the food that they waste food in different ways and in different quantities, and whereas if they get it in a restaurant, there's more food that gets thrown out. I don't know if there was one to add to that.
I'd just like to add that I think, and Megan brought this up earlier, we've lost our cooking skills. A lot of us don't know what a portion size looks like. We don't know how much of a particular vegetable or meat or pasta to cook. And so that's, I think, a huge at-home issue. But there are groups like Love Food, Hate Waste, and others have, you know, interesting things on their websites that can help, you know, people who don't know how to cook or new cooks really figure out what portions should look like. They have a food waste calculator portion size calculator that helps, you know, you sort of manage that. So I think things like that can be very helpful and explain why we waste so much food right now.
I think to add in, I mean, I think, again, it's sort of a bunch of factors. It's sort of been this, you know, our food system, I think, has changed over the past, like, 60 years, since, like, the 1950s. And so as one second wave of that, it was this creation of more waste. So for all the reasons we talked about, I think also foodborne illness, I mean, as people have become more aware when there are foodborne illness outbreaks, I think the response to that is people get really nervous. They say, I just want to keep myself safe. I just want to keep my family safe. And this comes up a lot in this work. People just say, what's the safest thing? And I think, first, inherently, food, if it's good and healthy food, there are going to be risks in it. People need to know how to mitigate those risks. But the best way to mitigate it isn't just to throw anything away that shows the tiniest sign of possibly not, you know, not being the freshest. So that's, I think, another.
Others?
Yeah. Hi, I'm Jennifer from City Harvest, New York City. Hello to my fellow food bank in New Orleans, you all part of the network. So, it's interesting to your question. Also, big, I was a food sourcer for 10 years there, and now I do healthy everyone work there. But big business, and businesses are getting bigger and bigger, so massive amounts of food coming through. It used to be more localized. Now, you know, we get huge donations from Dannon,
right,
for example,
right,
but there's 5 days left on that yogurt. And so we have to get it in on a truck trailer, get it out to New York City as fast as we can. And then we have to educate the agencies, the patients, the pantries that are getting it. Like, this food is still fine, even though now you have 3 days left on it, but Danny gives us an extra Saturday. So we give them a letter that says this yogurt's good for 10 more days. And it's still, though, they still get uncomfortable. Why are you giving me expired product? Like, no, remember, this is good for 10 more days, but it's still a mental mind game that people get really concerned and worried about.
Huge challenge. Because then you worry if you didn't get your message across that they're going to go home and do what anyone else would do when they see expired product and toss it. So that's an extra concern for us.
Or feel like disrespected, or like they're getting something that's not good enough.
Yeah,
instead of realizing this is perfectly good. And in fact, you know, yogurt production was something that was done a long time ago to preserve food, and now we're extra worried about it.
And it's good for us for a long time.
Yeah.
And it's tricky. When we were developing our food guidelines, we made a, for when we're vetting donations, a 12-month past the Best Buy date for canned goods. And that's arbitrary on our part, too, but we need to think about just anyone. Are they going to open a can and give it to their kid if it's 2 years past due? I mean, everyone's on the same playing field with that. So we have to take those considerations, we have to take that into consideration when we're bringing in our donations, unfortunately.
Just comment on the cannabis thing. There have been studies where people opened cannabis that were like 50 years old and actually rated it tasting better than cannabis. So, I mean, again, if it, you know, there are safety. I think people just lost this understanding of what is a safety concern and what's not. If your can, if it's dented or opened or whatever, obviously not so safe. But really, people have eaten cannabis very many years later to no ill.
Yes.
In the area of prescription drugs, there is perhaps an analogous situation, because there have been, over the years, a number of questions about what the expiration date on drugs means. And there's been some research. The expiration date on many drugs doesn't mean very much. It's a lot of life, but it depends very much. It varies from drug to drug. The Medical Letter has published a review of it. So my question to you is, who are the researchers who are going to gather the data to provide the documentation for the review article, and who's going to publish the review article? Is that something Consumer Reports should do? Who ought to be taking the lead?
Really good question. And, you know, I think it's been interesting being in this field because I'm an attorney. So my only degree is law, and so then people are saying, is my food safe? And I'm thinking, this is terrifying. I'm telling people to eat that food is safe. There's actually been, I think, over the past year, sort of alongside this, a lot of work on this. So there's a really interesting article that came out from the Institute of Food Technology that was a kind of across industry and government, a bunch of players involved that looked at all this data around the data labels and came to the same conclusion. So that was nice. Like, we got it right. But came to the same conclusions, and I think right now there's a lot of discussions going on around, so what do we do? If these dates don't mean what people think they mean, if they're not related to safety, then what's the right solution? And I think that's really still kind of an open question. I mean, if it's not possible to give people a date that's really a safety date, then what should we put on food? Should we take the dates away? Maybe. I think probably at this point, after being used to seeing them so much, people would be outraged. So then, you know, what's the kind of next best? What we're really pushing for is to say, you don't have to have a date on your food. But if you choose to have one, it should be the standardized date, and everyone should use the same one. And there should be some best practices of what that means. But that way we can kind of have one terminology and actually educate people about what that is. But I think you're right, and more work should be done, and
the nail on the head. More collaboration is needed across a range of sectors so that we can, you know, really get this issue on policymakers and businesses' radar. The Post-Harvest Education Foundation, which works internationally, they do a lot of, they're not specifically working with engineers, but they're doing engineer-type things and helping farmers in different communities build the infrastructure that they need and figure out things and have the ability to sort of experiment. And that this is, you know, the sort of the problem that occurs, you know, across agricultural development. Every village and every community, there's going to be a different solution to them. There's no one-size-fits-all approach. And so it does really take this collaboration that you mentioned among a lot of different stakeholders.
There's another group I'd mentioned in the U.S., Lean Path, where they've created these tools that they give to businesses where they really enable them to track every bit of where their waste is and what it's coming from and identify it. And they come out with a report that highlights opportunities for them, and that's, I think that's been extremely impactful for the companies that have used it.
Yeah. Thank you all for your presentation, and thank you to who's ever shut the blind. I'm so glad I can see you, and I feel like I'm not boiling right now. And so therefore I can shoot again. You made the connection during the presentation, the connection to food waste and food insecurity, but I think an additional connection that wasn't made is the connection between those who are food insecure and higher levels of obesity and higher levels of costly and deadly chronic disease. And I don't know if I really have a question about it. I just wanted to make that connection for this group, and perhaps that's something that goes under your discussion question for based on opportunities for public health, is that it's all connected, and as we try to address food waste and we try to address food insecurity, we've got to also address the nutrition component too. These folks who are disproportionately affected by it, it can't be food for the sake of food because somebody else is throwing away the nutritious food too.
That is a great point, and I think that's where like a lot of opportunity with our agriculture sourcing comes in, as our manufacturing donations go down. And a lot of times this is, you know, Nestle, this is Coca-Cola, these are, you know, donations that might not be the most nutritiously valuable. To replace that, you know, the opportunity to bring in locally sourced agriculture, you know, produce is huge, and it's going to make a difference in what we're able to provide to our clients. And then the piece about that was cooking classes. You know, one of the initiatives we're starting at Second Harvest is at some of our food distributions and mobile pantries, we're actually doing cooking demonstrations. So if, you know, we bring in a load of eggplants, and, you know, that's one of the items available at a food pantry, someone will be there cooking eggplant. Our clients can taste it, they can talk about the recipe, what else they can do with it. And I think that's a missing piece, you know, as for health, you know, outcomes as well. The full process of what to do with dishes.
And the amount of money that each family is saving by not wasting food is money that can go towards buying more fruits and vegetables and things like that that are potentially more expensive. Not that they necessarily will, but that's an opportunity that can be promoted. Other questions? Yeah. Fully, and I would say that where I was on Friday, where I was talking with Elise Golan, was actually at a panel on sustainable dietary guidelines, and we were talking about the idea that food waste should be part of those guidelines, and that it should be, and it was organized by Kim Robey, and that's why I'm pointing back there, and that we should be, we should be giving advice like that, but, you know, maybe even on the MyPlate diagram, there's a piece about food waste, but that it should be put out there.
These are all
Memo about each of them that said, this isn't related to safety, you know, look at the time, you know, look at your rationale for this. So,
really interesting.
Mm-hmm. Other questions, comments? Yeah.
Thank you.
a couple donors that they're called on-site feeding, which means you have to, maybe you can help me out with this, the restriction. There's restrictions like that. Removing labels, adding your own label is another. It's a tricky one. We have one bakery that donates a substantial amount of bread. They also have a thrift store for their older bread. So their big concern donating to us was, well, I think the people that are probably going to your pantry are actually our clients at the thrift store. So, you know, how do we make it so that you're not hurting our business? And I was like, let's just try it out and see how it goes. And so far, no complaints. So, kind of trial by error with that one.
I think on that point, too, it's amazing that there are certain kind of like companies and retailers with their policy not to donate at all.
Yeah.
And, I just was meeting with some students last week that were visiting a retailer in Massachusetts that throws away 15 tons of food a week and they refuse to donate any of it. And so we're sort of at the same place where it's like, well, you open up your doors, let us come in, but now we have this like juicy thing that's sort of, I think again, I don't want to shop at a place that I know does that. So I don't know. I think it gets to this question too, that sort of, if we now are, people look at labels for all these things, and you look at local or organic or healthy, whatever it is you're choosing, like if people really care about food waste, how can we build that into it and force companies to say, I don't care what you were doing before, but if going forward you don't make these better choices, I don't want to spend my dollars there because you're not stewarding my money and our food system well. So that would be my dream. And
I will say that a lot of companies in their corporate PR have built on this idea that they're trying to improve. They know that they weren't perfect in the past, but look at all this wonderful stuff we're doing. And I think that generally goes over pretty well. Yeah.
They're not going to be able to distribute it quickly enough, or like a refrigeration issue. We find that when we do bring in large loads of produce, time is of the matter, and it's working with those agencies that we know are open 5 days a week that have proper refrigeration, making sure that they have the ability to, we're not going to drop off a pallet of produce to someplace that's only open 1 day a month, unless it's like the day before. So there's a lot of logistics, and I think there's a lot of work on our back end that we know when those shipments come in that we can push it out that fast. And then making sure that our agencies have the equipment that they need to store it properly and get it out. It's a distribution issue. A lot of that happens on us.
You can give us
the
food, it's just
a distribution issue. Yeah, and you hear that a lot. And I know that there's a lot of grants becoming available to help, food pantries, shelters, get more freezer space and, acquire more refrigeration and even refrigerated trucks. So I think they're recognizing that distribution, the sourcing, there's some good things happening, but that distribution path is becoming a big issue as more and more produce is being sourced.
Let's take one last question, and you're it.
Okay.
Actually, when they do life cycle analysis of some of the packaging, the environmental impacts of that packaging are actually a lot lower than of the product that's being wasted. And that's particularly true when we're talking about meat and seafood waste, but it can be true of other kinds of waste as well. So it's tricky. We definitely don't want more packaging than we need, but sometimes that packaging actually prevents these other environmental impacts. It's a great comment. So, we are at time. Let me tell you, we have now wasted 216,312 metric tons of food around the world while we have been talking. Thank you all for coming, and thank you to the panelists.